Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Question Reality with Priscilla Leona, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Question Reality. I'm your host, Priscilla Leona, and we are coming to you live from Los Angeles, California. If this is your first time tuning in, our show is going to help you question your career reality. Now, this show is for you if you are considering a career in the entertainment industry. And our guests will provide advice on how and what it takes to successfully pursue a career in the entertainment industry. And some of our guests include Emmy, Grammy, Tony winners, reality stars, producers, directors, actors, singers, casting directors, talent managers, screenwriters, novelists, and the list goes on and on and on and on and on. And if they're working professionally in show business, we're going to have them on the show to give you entertainment career advice. And we make sure that our guests are at different stages of their careers, from professional to beginner. So that means that we will definitely have someone on the show who will be able to help you with your show business career questions. Now, you can listen to any of our past shows by going to our archive page of the LA Talk Radio website. That's latalkradio.com. And you just go to Channel 1, the Channel 1 link, and a drop-down box comes down. And you click Question Reality, and this is going to take you directly to our archive page. And our shows are also available to listen to and download on iTunes under the podcast section and on Stitcher.com. So just go to the websites and type Question Reality Radio in the search box. Now, if you want to find out about our future guest, as you know, we're booked 6 months to a year in advance, you have to go to another website, the official Question Reality website, and that is questionrealityradioshow.com, questionrealityradioshow.com. And we are booking right now for the new year. So if you want to be considered for a guest appearance, go to questionrealityradioshow.com and submit. If you also know someone who might want to be on the show who works, again, professionally, we would love to hear from them. So please, questionrealityradioshow.com. I also encourage you to download our free app for your Android or iPhone to be able to listen to all of the other exciting and informative shows on LA Talk Radio as well. And to download that app, go to our homepage, latalkradio.com, and the app is located towards the bottom of the page. So just scroll a little bit down. We have fantastic hosts on the show. Great shows. It just covers a whole pantheon of subjects. So please check it out, latalkradio.com. And as always, you get the top of the top, the cream of the puff on this show. My goodness, we have a wonderful guest again this week. He is the gorgeous, cute little adorable puffy puffball, my gorgeous little Clint Adams, and he is the author of a book called Evangeline, The Seer of Wall Street. And he is also an author of The Seventh Ritual, My Watch Doesn't Tell Time, Don't Be Afraid of Heaven, Fear Ain't All That, and Just Say Mikey. Now, Evangeline, his latest book, The Seer of Wall Street, this marks his first historical fiction novel, and this story is so super cool, and I had never even heard of Evangeline Adams before, so I love when people come on the show and bring me new information. It's very exciting. But this story is about one of America's first female entrepreneurs and And what do I love? Astrology. She was also a famed astrologist, Evangeline Adams. Now, Clint Adams, which I'm going to have to ask because having the same last name, I'm wondering if he's a descendant. We'll have to ask him. Clint Adams, what he does is he seamlessly weaves in Evangeline's association with various famous people from the early 1900s, like J.P. Morgan, King Edward the 6th, 7th. When it comes to Roman numerals, I have to do my counting. I have to use my fingers and toes. King Edward the 7th, I believe. Enrico Caruso, Rudolph Valentino. Ooh la la on that one. Charles Schwab, Mary Pickford. Oh, my favorite silent movie actress. I love Charlie Chaplin too. Charlie Chaplin and a whole bunch of others. And it immerses readers in a New York populated with Wall Street wealthy. It's about the wealthy and the downtrodden. And all of these people have visited Evangeline's Carnegie Hall office. So fascinating fiction. Piece of fiction. You got to check it out. Now, the release of this book, Evangeline, marks Clint's second adult fiction novel. His first was the thriller entitled The Seventh Ritual, A Race for Survival, which was also adapted into a screenplay. So we're going to find out what happened to that. And he has also authored numerous academic publications while at the Washington Post, Kaplan, Inc., and McGraw-Hill. And Clint has been a member of the Authors Guild for over 20 years. He earned his Bachelor of Arts degree in drama from the University of California, Berkeley. He studied creative writing at San Francisco State University and received his master's degree in marketing from San Francisco's Golden Gate University. And last but not least, he's a 2010 recipient of Britain's Millennium Trust Award. So without further ado, let's get him on. Hey, Clint, what's going on?
Hey, Priscilla, what's up?
Wow, my God, you're impressive. I feel intimidated talking to such a smarty like you.
Marty? No. The best thing that you've said so far is that I'm your puffy puffball. Where'd you get that?
Oh, you kidding? Ask your PR agent, Stephen Levine. I call people all kinds of names. I call him Lollipop-licious, or then I'll call him my little scrambled egg of...
Oh, my God.
Oh, I always come up with really cute names for special people. I love it. I love to come up with names. So
I feel flattered. Thank you.
Good, my little creepy
creep. And thanks for having me on your show.
Are you kidding? I love Stephen Levine, and he has the best clients ever.
He's wonderful.
Oh, I understand you're a new addition to his empire.
Yes, that's
true.
He is creating an empire.
I mean, I was very fortunate. I started my radio show, Clint, in 2008, and Stephen came along in 2009. And the first year, it's always so hard to get people to come on your show. So I was bringing in all my friends, you know, who work in the industry. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, God, what am I going to do for 2009? And all of a sudden, Stephen came along with the most wonderful clients. And he's a great guy. So you're very lucky to have him as a PR guy. Fantastic.
Oh, he's wonderful. Yeah. And you know what he does? He's very literate when he writes emails. I tell you, he really should be an author because he doesn't say you are spelled letter U R.
Oh, yes.
He knows how to spell it out.
Oh.
And he knows the difference between your and your. So,
yes. Oh, my
gosh. He's a genius.
Clint, you and I share the same pet peeve because I tell you, do you know what I do? Now, you're going to think this is crazy. Do you know when I get emails like what you're just talking about that I actually will copy them, I'll put them in Notepad, and I edit them before I read them. I can't read them. I cannot read them.
Oh my God.
Yes, I'll edit them.
They're the ones that should be editing it. They should be revising them, not you. Oh my goodness.
I cannot read it if it doesn't have punctuation and proper grammar.
It's terrible.
It is. homegrown people with a degree. My God. And, you know, some of them are lawyers and doctors. You know, my mom's an OBGYN, and I get emails not from her because she's very good in English, but from some of her friends, and they do the your, you know, Y-O-U-R.
Yeah. Oh, everybody does. Everybody does. Yeah, it's, you know, to define fiction are the text messages. You know, kids just, you know, but I tell you, this is advice that, you know, since you're going to be asking for advice, here's one right off the bat. If you're a teen, young adult, don't forget, this is, you know, when you write anything, an email, a text message, this is someone else's very first impression of you. Right. And if it's poorly punctuated, spelled incorrectly, you know, it's just going to be natural for an adult to think a little bit negatively. You know,
absolutely.
First impressions, you just can't take them back. And, you know, these days, people's first impressions are social media, email, text messages. So they try to make them, try to you know, edit and revise. There's nothing wrong with that.
Focus on your English classes is what you need to do. I was so embarrassed, Clint. I referred, you know, I'm always trying to help anyone. That's just what I do. It brings me joy to help people. I referred a writer. Now, I just assumed, I made the mistake of assuming that, because a couple people were like, oh my God, his book's so great. It was just, I didn't have a chance to read it. But anyway, they were talking about how great it was and this and that. So I made the mistake of referring him to a producer friend of mine in New York. And when she sent me this email and she said, Priscilla, I cannot believe, she said, I couldn't get past the first two pages. There were so many grammatical errors, spelling, and this is a writer.
And this is a professional writer? Who did this?
Professional writer. Oh, I can't.
Oh, no. They're not professional. They have mistakes on the first... two pages. That's no good.
It's embarrassing. But, you know, I'm so glad you said that, because please, please focus. Even if it's an email, you need to focus on that, because it's true. If I get an email from someone who wants to come on my show and they do that, I already think, no, I can't, because I don't I don't have respect for their lack of attention to detail. And that tells me a lot about the person. And I only want to deal with professionals. And if you can't compose an email, how are you going to enrich my listeners? You know,
Exactly. So I have to ask you, did you say, I didn't know this about you, but are you fond of astrology? Is that correct?
Oh my goodness. Yes.
Oh, you are.
I'm not a professional, but I have been doing little charts since I was 13 years old. And I find it fascinating. And as I've studied it and gone on, I have found that it is so, you know, the FBI, the CIA, Department of Justice, they actually, about 5 years ago, they actually accepted astrology into their learning courses in the academy to help profile. Because they finally have acknowledged the fact that depending on your, you know, your astrological sign. And again, there are 12 houses, so you can't really, I mean, it's very complicated. But based on sun sign alone, there are certain characteristic traits and patterns that you can add to the
birth. When's your birthday? What are you?
November 12th. I'm Scorpio.
We're twins. I'm the same.
Are you a Scorpio too?
So you know who else is a Scorpio? Hillary Clinton, Julia Roberts, and for us, tell me if I'm right or wrong, it's something that we hold dear, right?
Oh,
honesty.
Yes,
and God forbid somebody is dishonest with us.
Yes.
We whip out that Scorpio stinger.
I value loyalty too. Honesty and loyalty are
loyalty.
Very important.
Absolutely.
And it's so hard, especially in this town, because I'm from the East Coast. So I find that people are a little bit more real and down to earth, and they kind of tell it, whether you like it or not, we tell it like it is. If we don't like you, you're going to know it. Yeah. And I have no problem telling. But I find out here it's very hard, because a lot of people will smile in your face and then they, you know, they kind of will stab you in the back a little. You'll get a little dagger.
Ouch.
But you know what?
Well, you're going to have to sting them. That's what you do.
Moving on. I don't need you. I got thousands of friends. Don't need you, you little profiteer. Yeah, I can't Oh my gosh, I have such a big problem with people who are gold diggers, opportunists, and profiteers.
Yeah.
And you know, I can spot them. You know, being Scorpio, we can see through people in like 5 minutes or less,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
We just
it
have
doesn't
them.
Take long. Yeah.
It doesn't take long. But, you know, yeah. I just let them be. I let them do them. I'm like, you just be you. I'm going to be me. And I just move on.
Yeah.
You know what, Clint? Well, I want to ask you something. First of all, I want to get your websites out there, ClintAdams.com.
Yeah.
You're also on Twitter at Clint Adams, Facebook at Clint Adams. Now, first of all, I want to ask you, when did little Clint Adams know he wanted to be a writer? When you were little, you know, we want to be Superman, Wonder Woman. What'd you want to be? Was it
a
writer?
Well, thank God I'm a Scorpio. I will tell you the truth. I never wanted to be one. Oh, I never wanted to be a writer. When I was a kid, I didn't do much reading until I was in my 30s, that I decided I had to be a writer. I also created something called Stories About FacingFear.com, and the whole point is that storytelling is cathartic. It's a lot of the writing process for many, many people is kind of a catharsis, a therapy of sorts. And for me, there was, because of the truth is so meaningful, I had an experience when I was 34 where the truth, a story that lived inside me had to come out. It wasn't a wish or a desire. It was a necessity. And this was in 1992. And I realized, well, nobody's going to tell it for me, so I better learn how to be a writer and tell it myself. So I wasn't apparently ready to tell it, but for the first few years that I was a writer, but finally in 2009, I wrote The Seventh Ritual, and that was, it's a fiction based on fact. And when I was done telling Matt, I thought, I'm done writing. I won't write any books anymore because I'm finished with it. Because that was my intention was to tell a very personal story. And I did it. And I thought, okay, on to something new. And here I am writing again. So you just never know.
Well, let me, Evangeline, the Seer of Wall Street, how did you come up with this idea for the book?
Yeah, that's the thing. I was already established as a writer of young adult books, and I never really had interest in writing about Evangeline Adams. I learned about her in 1987, was the first time that I heard her name. I didn't know who she was either. And I thought I was related to her because as a little kid, I was told that I was related to John and John Quincy Adams, and so was she. So I thought, I put two and two together. I thought, well, she and I must be related. But as years went on, I realized I don't write biographies, and, you know, someone else has already done that. So out of nowhere, I flipped through Wikipedia, you know, and found out that she had a female companion in the later years of her life. And that was like a lightning bolt inside my head. I thought, well, as a novelist, this is the story that I want to tell. I have one of your questions I see on the marketing is the message that I wanted readers to grasp most, and that would be the fact that you can't change or alter your true destiny. And for Evangeline Adams, even though she was so preoccupied with fame and fortune, she also had to rectify this information that she's a lesbian. And so, I thought, man, this is so timely and relevant that, the way she's able to come up with so much information scientifically for horoscopes, when she does her own horoscope, her own chart, and sees a very, very close relationship with a woman, she doesn't know what to do with that because 100 years ago, being openly gay just didn't happen. So that was the original, the one and only theme in the book. And then I worked with an editor in New York, and we picked something a little bit even more of a common denominator, and that was the fact that you can't alter your death and when it's time to go and how you go and so on. And so that's kind of, the book is really about that more than anything else, but, coming to terms with your sexual preference, that's another one.
Well, tell us who, for those people who don't know who Evangeline Adams was, who was she? Tell us a little bit about her.
I will tell you. she was very, very career driven. You know, over 100 years ago, she lived from 1868 to 1932. And she began her career in Boston. She is a direct descendant of John and John Quincy Adams, become forever and ever the world's most famous astrologer. And here it is well over 100 years later, and she still is. So she's the one that the way the book opens, it's the first chapter is told in the present tense, and it's told non-linearly. It's from chapters 2 to 28. It's all goes in chronological order. But the first one, I saw it as the most prominent event in her life, and it was the second time she was arrested for what New York City considered fortune-telling. And so she, instead of paying a petty fine of $200, she said, no, you arrested me, you know, take me to trial, I will show you, you know, what I'm able to do. And so before the judge, there was also female prosecutor who really wanted to bring her down. And so all that she asked for was the time of birth, the date of birth, and the place of birth of someone at random. She didn't know anything about who this person was. And with her books and her tools, she created this story, and she said, oh, my goodness. She said, this is a boy who's not going to make it very far in life. He's going to die young, a watery death. He's gregarious on the inside, shy on the outside, blah, blah, blah. And so she, you know, she gives her this whole speech about who her interpretation of this chart, and then the whole courtroom goes silent, and the judge said, oh, my God, that was my son. He just drowned. You know, and so he, because of her, she was able to represent herself intelligently, you know, realize that she's a woman of, she's a learned woman, and also she was able to interpret this as a science. And from that point on, this was in 1914, he declared that astrology is an exact science. It's not hocus pocus. And from that point on in history, new horoscopes started to appear in newspapers, and she's the one that really made astrology commercial.
Wow, that sounds more like a combination of doing a tarot card reading or doing visiting like a psychic medium instead of astrology. I never knew that astrology even went to those limits. I've never.
Wow. Oh, yeah. She was also very intuitive. I mean, in her career, she moved from Boston to Manhattan, and she began her career as a palmist. And, you know, I'm not an astrologer, and the book is not about astrology, but the fact is she was, you know, one of the world's most famous astrologers.
Was she a socialite, being a descendant of John and John?
I tell you something, if you look at today's culture, people who, you know, who want to make a name for themselves do socialize with the right people. And her main client in the early years was J.P. Morgan, the financier, and also Charles Schwab and Seymour Cromwell, three presidents of the New York Stock Exchange. And so she really made a name for herself on Wall Street. And I have many, many, many scenes that where she takes a coach from Midtown down to Wall Street and just begins to fantasize and sees how much money is there. And also she was very prominent in the Wall Street crash of 1914. You know, she predicted, she had by this point hundreds of thousands of newsletter subscribers and warned them of the market and whatever the good one is. You know this? The book. There's the book. The good fortune, you know, comes first. And then, of course, the crash. And she saw both coming. So, and she learned, you know, a lot of this from J.P. Morgan. And so she did have a lot of celebrity clients, Enrico Caruso and Mary Pickford in particular. They absolutely take no action in their lives without consulting her first.
Charlie Chaplin.
And I also have a fictitious scene where, you know this already. You have hots for Rudolph Valentino, right?
Yeah.
You do? That's what I think you said that.
Well, I don't think Rudolph Valentino would be interested in me because I don't think I have the right parts. I don't think I could bend him over unless I had a strap on. So.
That's funny. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Yeah. See, well, that's what I heard through the grapevine.
In the early 1900s, you couldn't response. You know, that's just, that's, it ain't going to happen. But, you know, another coincidence, I'm sidetracking now, but also her, the biggest fame that she had, Evangeline, was a radio show. She had a national radio show that began in 1930 as a result of the Wall Street crash and had, you know, at that time, just throngs of fans all over the country. It was broadcast on ABC three times a week, and she gave her a tremendous amount of fame. And then she died a couple years after that, you know. But
was it an actual fact, like a fact that she was a lesbian, and was she open about it? And if so, how was she able to be so successful and not be persecuted during that time period?
Oh, boy, did you ask a good question. You're going to have to, I'm going to send you the, you have the book? I'll give you a book.
No, I have no book, no autograph book at all. I want a hard copy, please, for me and my mother.
I will send you two copies. But that's a great question. That is a great question because I've been asked that before. And, you know, I don't know if you know Kirkus Reviews. It's a big deal in the publishing business. And it's they just finally got around to reviewing this book, and they called it a fanciful fictional memoir. You know, instead of historical fiction, I wrote it in the first person as Evangeline, and I've even had, you know, a few people now ask me, God, I can't believe this was written by a man. So from now on, just, I think it would work better. Huh?
Right.
It would maybe sell more books. I don't know.
Yeah. You have to put a wig on and some heels to kind of really get the feel.
Oh, man. And I'm too hairy. I have too much to shave. I don't think maybe that won't work. But,
Let me ask you, is the theme of the book, I read this somewhere, is the theme of the book about death and how you believe that you can't change your destiny? And if so, why don't you believe that you can change your destiny? I mean, how do you think our destiny was or is determined also?
Oh, good question. Well, according to Evangeline, the stars are infallible. You can't, you don't mess with what she called old age fortune. You know, she does say that we all have a free will, but man, the way she was able to decipher the stars and what they mean and, you know, to look at your future, it was just down to the nth degree as to what's going to happen in your life. And for all these people, you know, her celebrity clients, J.P. Morgan, King Edward, Enrico Caruso, Rudolph Valentino, she predicted to the minute when they were going to die decades beforehand. You know, she knew exactly when people were going to die, and that really does set up the plot for this particular book. The first sentence of the book is something like 6,335 days remain in my life, according to my calculations. And so she knows how much time remains. And then she has a lover, and in real life, her name was Emma Sheridan Frye. She was an actress and a playwright. She offers, conversely, a different point of view, where you're not supposed to know anything about the future. You're supposed to be living in the moment and live every day as if it were your last. And so that, to be honest, is my point of view. So I had to put that in there, you know, as kind of a contrast. Swaying Evangeline, she just said, you know, you can't change your destiny. This is what is laid out for you. And she didn't, I couldn't really gather how much she believed in God, but I do. And I believe that we are kind of sent here with certain lessons to learn in life. And the young adult books that I had written are rather spiritual, and they kind of have to do with this. One book I wrote was called Don't Be Afraid of Heaven. And I thought, man, I would love to incorporate a little bit of that into this book for adults. And so I got my wish. So
how has the literary community been accepting the book? What are their, is it been a positive response to it or controversial?
Well, I wish I haven't heard that much. You know, like I said, this Kirkus, it's been reviewed a few times, and it's still rather fresh and new. But, you know, I think that the people that I was waiting to hear from most are people really into astrology, because I thought they're the ones that are going to pick this thing apart and say, well, you didn't do it this way, and maybe I like this or that, and, oh, no, so-and-so is the most famous astrologer. So I'm still kind of waiting to hear, but... you know, one thing I did is I really did follow a fact. It's not just, I'm not just telling a story, but I paid, you know, a good amount of money to do, have reprints from the New York Times put in the book, you know, real articles about Evangeline, and it really also added to the plot. So I thought, you know, even the editor I worked with, she said, are you sure you want to use these? It's going to be expensive. And I thought, well, gosh, I'm never going to write this book again. You know, to me, it gives authenticity, and it shows that I'm not just, this just isn't a story out of nowhere. This is,
right.
This was a real woman that existed in history, and, you know, the thing I would want readers to know most about this woman, aside from astrology, in terms of being successful, she really was one of America's first female protagonists, or excuse me, entrepreneurs. You know, she and Helena Rubinstein, the cosmetics woman, giant, were the only two women that didn't, you know, inherit fortune from a dead husband, or and in these days, women weren't issued loans from banks. So it was extremely challenging, but she was so determined to be successful. And women it was just extra challenging in those days, as you can imagine.
Well, I can certainly imagine. Now, your book is available, oh my gosh, just about everywhere. I think that we need to go right now to Amazon, which is where you can purchase it, Amazon.com. It's available in hardcover. I imagine Kindle as well. It's at Barnes & Noble.
Yeah.
I was just at Barnes & Noble on Friday night. I would have looked it up had I even knew it was in Barnes & Noble. Barnes & Noble, Nook, Google Books, Smashwords. Where else do we have it? Anywhere else? Cold Coffee Cafe and Cold Coffee Press, right?
Well, yeah, and also all the international sites. It's available at all the different Amazon Spain, Amazon Italy, Germany, France, Australia. It's India. It's everywhere. So
it is everywhere.
It's everywhere. I'm
woo!
A book whore. You know?
Well, I hope it enters my coffee table soon. I want a copy, an autographed copy, please.
Well, I told you I was one, and you wanted one for your mother too, right?
Yeah, that would be great. So send them on over to Stephen Levine, and I'm going to have him come and bring them to me, and then we're going to have mushroom risotto. So yes,
there you go. Stephen read it. Stephen read it.
He told me he really did. He said he was just engrossed in the book. He couldn't
believe it. Oh, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, that's what he told me in an email. Now, since the publication of your acclaimed debut middle grade novel, Just Say Mikey, you have conducted dozens of workshops for stories about facing fear throughout Europe. And I guess this is in an effort to bring an empowering message to teens worldwide. So that you can help them maintain that I can do anything attitude. So my first question when I was reading that about you is, why the teen demographic? Do you do the same for the adult demographic? And I tell you, well, I tell you why. Let me just tell you there, Clint, to give you a little food for thought. Because we oldies but goodies need a little empowerment too, especially since the wrinkles and the moles and skin tags are just running rampant these days. Please, we need some workshops too. Damn those teens.
Oh, Priscilla, come on. You're younger than me. Come on.
They're young.
I got to tell you this. Let me tell you. It's when I started doing these, first of all, I created stories about facing fear for a very particular reason. And I believe that this, you could call this spiritual or not, but I really do believe that all fear is learned. And when I look back at my own life, I would have to say that all of my obstacles were learned obstacles. Fear, I don't believe that God put us here with any fear. Any fear that we experience, we learned it from somewhere. These days, probably the internet. I don't know. But what I was going to say, that the reason I have this for teens in particular is I believe in the growth process. Kids, especially when you talk to kids, they are fearless. They don't have any fear. And then at some point, usually when they get to be 15, 16, 17, And the time is approaching for them to go to college or to think about creating their own lives as an adult. That's when they start to become afraid. And that's when I think it's most crucial to remember that you weren't born the day you die. It shouldn't end when you hit 17, 18, 19, 20. And so that's why it was so important to, you know, target that group in particular. And I did this, you know, later on in just the UK. In 2005, I became an Italian citizen. And one of the reasons I was so disgruntled with American publishing, I decided to go to Europe and never come back. And here I am. But the thing is, what I was going to say about the UK is when I read statistics that one British teen attempts suicide every half hour, I thought, this is a culture that probably needs this more than anywhere. And when I start going to all the different school districts, and somebody actually said to me, the whole purpose of this group is to tell personal stories that are, no matter how uncomfortable, just as a catharsis, just to get them out. And I can remember some school districts in the UK said to me, well, Clint, that's too American. We don't do that here. We don't talk about our problems. And I thought, oh, man, no wonder you're screwed up, you know. So there's a lot of great things about the UK, I don't know if you remember that there were riots in Tottenham, and mostly led by teens and young adults, and I just thought, wow, this would be perfect here, and so that's why I focused on the UK probably more than anywhere.
Mm, wow. So are you still doing your workshops here, though? Did you bring it back here?
No.
Okay.
No, it's ever since I've been here, I decided, here's another thing. This has a lot to do with the ticking clock theme or plot in my book, is that I'm going to be 58 next month. And the thing is, you know, I tell you, I enjoy doing, you know, writing teen books and marketing to a niche, you know, the young adult, the visionary teen fiction. And then I decided as I get older, I thought, what about me? You know, I think, you know, cheering and supporting and not really going for it. And I would say with Evangeline in particular, I see this project as being very commercial. And I'm not stopping until I see some really good rewards, you know. There's nothing wrong with saying that. If you've worked hard at something for a really long time and you've bettered your craft, and that's also advice I would give to writers, is that marketing is very important. But at the very same time, writing, and through practice, you can become improved, better, more creative as you go along, more professional. And like you talked about, those grammatical errors in the first two pages of that. that writer should know better.
English,
come on.
English. Take some English classes. Now, we're going to get into the career advice portion of the show. First of all, now, I have to ask you this, because even I get confused at times. What, if any, is the difference between the titles of writer, author, novelist?
Oh, good question. For me, they're all the same. Well, the novelist, that's the easiest one to pick out. Novelist, person who's a novelist only writes fiction. Novel is synonymous with fiction, whereas someone who's a writer or an author, they can write nonfiction books or anything else. But novelist means that you just write fiction. So that's one difference. Also, when I think about the word author, you know, a person could write, I take that back. The words writer and author are synonymous. They're exactly the same. I don't see any difference. But the one that differentiates, you know, between those three is novelist. That one is very different.
Okay. Yeah, because some people, they like to call themselves writers and then authors and then novelists. And, you know, it gets confusing to the average old Joe Schmo. It's like, what? Because you don't want to call them out of their name because they get very persnickety about that. My God.
I mean,
writer, I would think writer, you could write a fiction, a nonfiction. I think you can write everything. I think that's an overall, I think. Then an author, I think they can write, I think, again, don't quote me on any people, don't send me any damn emails correcting me, because I already am telling you that I'm not sure. I'm going to have to look it up. I'm look it up. It makes that's it. I'm gonna look it up. Now, what do you feel are the biggest obstacles being a what word shall we use? Writer, author, novelist?
Either one. No, I think I'll tell you something. I think again, you know, differentiating between writer and author. I think an old school person would think that the word author means you are a professional at this. You've been doing it longer. You make your living as a writer, you know, but that I don't think that applies anymore. I see those words being synonymous. But anyway, the most challenging part of being a writer, is that what you asked?
What do you feel are the biggest obstacles?
Most challenging. Well, I tell you, it's a lot of people. You know, when you go into it, I would say a lot of beginners are a bit delusional about the way it works. And when I told you I became an Italian citizen, and they it was bizarre because in Italian there's not even a word that translates for the word marketing. And I thought, well, how am I going to explain this? So I tried to explain in Italian, but they said, oh, Clint, this is wonderful. You live here and you will write your books. And I said, oh, no. It's like now I have to go and market it. And I didn't even know how to say that in Italian. And then I think a lot of, in my opinion, if I had to, you know, distinguish what it's like in percentages, a writer spends 5% of their life writing, 95% marketing. And I went in 2004, I went back to school as an adult to get a master's degree in marketing just to market my books. And when they were only doing it to get their promotions at Google and Hewlett-Packard and so on. And they said, what the hell? They said, what do you do? I said, I'm an author. Well, what the hell are you doing in this? What are you doing? And I said, well, you think someone's going to do it for me? You know, and it's, you know, publicists are great, Stephen. And, you know, but basically the author still has to be responsible for everything they do. And here's another piece of advice is the dedication in my book. I spent many, many, many years trying to get the approval or the acceptance of a literary agent or a publisher, and that was really time wasted, and those were really the most disempowering moments of my life. And so the dedication...
That was my next question. Yeah. What are the steps to getting a book published these days and
being
the greatest success? How do you do it yourself? How do you do that?
Oh, it's... You can... With the internet, you could find... You have to watch out. You know, there's
scam artists.
And ask people that, you know, have done it before. But let me read you my dedication. It says, to those wise enough to know that yours is the only yes that matters. Meaning, don't go, you know, you write a book, it's in your second or third book, whatever. Don't go and give your power away by trying to get X, Y, and Z to say it's good enough. It's good enough because you've written, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 drafts of it. Maybe you worked with an editor. Great. It's good enough. Go do it. Go publish it. You know, go market it.
You know, and a lot of people, I get so many people asking me, they write a book and they say, I need to find a literary agent. And I'm not schooled on this whole writing thing because I'm not a writer, but I know that they have to send out these query letters. And I actually had a friend who was a writer, and he had a big cork board, and he called it his wall of rejection. And he had all his reject query letters up there as, you know, is that still the case with the internet? I mean, how can you get a book published? Just real simple.
Okay. Well, getting back to agents, these days I would say about 50% of them or maybe more accept e-queries. So, you know, if you want to go that route, you do it via email. But I would say with the old-fashioned way, in 1992 when I first started writing, I already – this was – what is that, 23 years ago. I already – by that time, I just started, and I had a whole wall full of rejections. And when I spent so much time as a young adult author, you know, I really did look up to people like J.K. Rowling and the Harry Potter series. And when she – but when I would see her interviewed – and she's brilliant. But on the other hand, when I would see her maybe complain about having received 5 to 10 or so rejections – before it was accepted by Bloomsbury in the UK, I thought, you know, now in 2015, I've received probably thousands of rejections for all the things that I've done. And now, you know, it's taken this long for me to realize, wow, I don't need any of those people that I thought that I did need before. And so I would love to relay that. But
well, what are you doing? What did you do to get your book published?
Well, it's this. There's one. The two biggest. This isn't a plug, but I'll just stating facts. But the for self publishing, if you want to do it yourself, CreateSpace that is owned by Amazon is one of the better ways to have your book printed as a paperback. They don't do hardcovers. Its closest competitor is called Lightning Source, and it's owned by Ingram, which is the largest book wholesaler in the world. And so that's if you want to do hardcovers. Also, Kindle Direct or Ingram Spark for doing ebooks. I really do recommend paying. It doesn't cost more than a couple $100. If you're really tech savvy, you can come into ebook yourself. But now there's so many different files. Amazon has their own, what is their file called? Mobi. And then there's EPUB files for Nook and things like this. If you want to sell your books on iBooks, that's yet another file. And really the author publisher is responsible for getting those out there. But I would say, yeah, if you were to just look under Kindle Direct Publishing, that's a great resource, you know.
Okay. So you said CreateSpace on Amazon and Lightning Source is what you said?
Yeah, those are the two biggest. Are the two biggest for print books. CreateSpace for paperbacks. Yeah.
And so once you create these, publish your book, but the thing is with these particular ways of doing it, it's assumed that you have already edited it and you've had somebody look at it to the point where it's at a perfected state that you can do it, because they don't do that for you, correct? I mean, once you just put it on there, you just put it on there as is.
Yeah.
So any mistakes that are in the book, that's just going to stay. So you have to make sure that you do all of this editing and proofreading yourself. Actually, it's not recommended to do it yourself, to have someone do that for you. So am I correct?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's when your role changes from author to publisher. You stop being the author. You're done with your own editing and revising. If you can afford to let someone else, edit it, you could go on Craigslist, find an editor. You could find them anyway. I found an editor, and she, I was done working with her, but somehow I ended up writing, I think, three, four, five, or six drafts even after I was done working with her, and I added a lot of historical detail. Another thing about working, if you do hire an editor who has worked at one of the traditional publishing houses, they know what is marketable, what isn't, and you kind of have to be in the industry to know that well.
Yeah.
So that was an advantage, yeah.
You know, I just, we have 3 minutes left, so I just want to get in with anything that you want to get in. Over the Friday, we went to try to go to the Apple store to look at the iPhone 6 Plus S, and as we were passing, there was a huge line at the Grove. We went to the Grove, and I thought, oh, this is the iPhone line. It wasn't the iPhone line. The line to go into Barnes & Noble, because Leah Michelle from Glee was doing a book signing.
And Oh my God.
What the hell does she know about writing books? She knows she had a ghostwriter do that book. No offense, Leah Michelle.
Hey, Priscilla, maybe she was giving away iPhones.
I know. That's the only way you would have got me in there, just in a line for a book from Leah Michelle. But wonderful actress, by the way, very talented. But I don't really see her as a writer. But that's what everybody's doing. Everybody's popping out a book these days. And you're like, come on. They can. I mean, if you even asked them how to create parallel structure within a paragraph, they probably wouldn't.
No.
So they have ghostwriters. So to end what we were talking about, if you want to write a book but you don't feel that you have the skills, there are ghostwriters out there. There are wonderful companies out there. I think one off the top of my head is Writers of the Round Table, which has been around for a long time. So if you have the money, they will write the book for you. So don't think that you can't write a book, because you don't have to be a good speller or a writer to write a book. Anybody can write a book. Leah Michelle just wrote a book. So,
oh my God! I hope she's not listening, huh?
Oh, I just don't care. I'm a Scorpio. I just tell you what I think. She's a wonderful actress.
Oh my God! Well, can I give you my take on that? I'll tell you very quickly.
Yeah.
I'm not really fond of ghostwriting is you know one way to go, but it's contrary to my whole belief that there's a story. Any writer who wants to write a book, it's a story inside them that needs to come out. You're not going to do justice to that story to have someone else write it or transcribe it. It's learn the craft of writing, go to a writing class, join a critique group, learn how to do it, and write your book. You'll be surprised. You can start from scratch, and
I'm just thinking about somebody in Padunk trying to write a book about his experience in hay, and I just don't know if that would work, but somebody else might have to put the words together for Mr. I think that would be the exception. Well, I want to thank you so much, Mr. Clint Adams, and I can't wait to read your book, and I'm sure you got a ton of exciting things. Hopefully Stephen will get you out on the red carpet. I want to see that on the bestseller list. Put a little fork in Stephen and say, I want to be on the bestseller. Was it the New York Times bestseller list? So
yes.
Got his goals cut out.
Definitely. Well, because of you, Priscilla, I'm changing my name to Puffy Puffball.
I think it should be Clint Puffy Puffball Adams. Why not?
Yes.
Or at least if you get a boat, the Puffy Puffball, I think would work really good. Well, I want to thank you. You are such a sweetheart, and I want you to come back on the show next year. So tell Stephen, would you come back with your next book?
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Yeah. So everybody go to Amazon right now and get your copy of Evangeline, The Seer of Wall Street by the one, the only Creamy Cream Ball. Oh, is it Creamy Cream Ball or Creamy Puff Ball? Creamy Cream Puff Ball, Clint Adams, the one and only author. And he has a ton of other books on Amazon.com. You can also check out his website, ClintAdams.com. Say goodbye to your fans, Clint Adams.
Thank you. Yes, wonderful.
Buy my book. Say buy my book.
Buy my books, please. You may learn something. You never know. Thank you.
Thank you, Clint. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week on Question Reality. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You're listening to Question Reality with Priscilla Leona right here on LA Talk Radio.